Satyastitirnahamudetiyatra tachodiyasthanagaveshanena vinana nashet yaritanna nashet swatmaikya rupa katam astu nishtha satya stitihi na aham udeti yatra tat cha udaya sthana gaveshanena vina na nashet yadi tat na nashet swatma aikya rupa katam astu nishtha. Satya stitihi, that which is. Stiti is kind of like just saying asti or is. If I say satya stitihi, that which is satya, means that which is real, that which actually exists and can't be negated in past, present, or future, which is the definition of satyam, that which actually is, not subject to change, not coming into being or going out of being. So not bordered by non-existence, that which actually is. So for that which actually is, na aham udeti yatra. That which actually is that where yatra, the aham, the I, the ahankara, na udeti, where the ahankara does not rise, does not come into being, that is what actually is. Soft and fold that, but just to get the Sanskrit. So satya stittihi, that which is actually real, that is where the ahankara, the ego, the I thought, does not rise. Then it says, tatcha udhyasthana gaveshanena vina. It says, without inquiring into the sthana, into the actual place where that does arise, without inquiring into the actual place of that arising, nanashet, it can't be destroyed. Without inquiring into that actual place where the ahankara does arise, then that ahankara, that I notion, can't be destroyed. Then it says, tannanashet, and if it isn't destroyed, if that ahankara isn't destroyed, then katam astu nishtha, how can there be any nishtha or any abiding in swatma aikirupa, in one's own nature, which is aikya, swatma aikirupa? How can there be any abiding or any jnana nishtha, any recognition of your own being, which is aikya, which is actually, when you say swatma aikya, that means one's own being is actually aikya. It's one without a second. It's the very being, which is the being, which is the truth of the universe, is actually what that means. So, and this is the verse in Ramana's own style. This door is too hot. The ahankara, the I, what we call I notion, or just the I thought, is enough, right? Just like when you write now, if you say I, what if you say I am, just the words I am, or just the word I, it's actually a word, right? And so it's a word actually that comes, that arises in your mind. Right? When you're in deep sleep and the mind's in unmanifest condition, there is no such word I, nor is there any concept I. And so now, the ahankara, the I notion, when it comes up, right? That isn't, it's not coming up in the self. It's coming up in the mind. It's a vritti. It's a thought modification. We don't usually think of the I we take it totally for granted, but we don't think of the word I as a thought. Hey, Tibby, it's okay. We don't think of the word I as the thought which comes and goes. But it is a thought which comes and goes. And so what he's saying here is that this thought is not something that is rising in the self. It's something that's rising in the mind. It's a vritti. It's a thought modification in the mind. Like, for instance, if I say, look at that painting. Now the painting becomes a thought modification in the mind. Now I can have a statement that says, I am looking at the painting. That's the ahankara. If I say a statement, I am looking at the painting, then that's a complex statement. Now, who am I, the one that is looking at the painting? Well, that means that this body-mind-sense organs using my eyes becomes the I. I can actually say just my eyes are becoming. But if I start to analyze it, well, really, the eyes which are abiding in this body are focused on the painting, which is giving a vritti, a thought modification in my mind of the painting which consciousness illumines. So we're not going to talk about it like that, but that's what it is. So the sense organs give me a thought modification of the painting, which is now just the experience, raw data, the experience of the painting that's given to me through my sense perception. And now my buddhi, the intellect, which the ahankara is associated with, can have a running commentary on the painting. The commentary can be in reference to the painting. Oh, that's a beautiful painting that actually Edward gave me, and it's of Santa Barbara, a place that he likes. I could go on and on about how I received this painting. And then I can talk about the author and go on and on. But now I can also talk about me, the one who has received the painting, the one who is aware of the painting. Now I'm looking at this painting right now. I remember when I got the painting, 20 years ago, when I received the painting, I. So now I'm giving a whole commentary about me, the one who received the painting. Okay? Now, those are also vrittis. Those are also thought modifications. Thought modification of my perception of the painting is a thought modification. My commentary from the buddhi about the nature of the painting, jnana vrittis, knowledge vrittis about the nature of the painting, vrittis, the comments on myself, the seer of the painting when I receive the painting, I, my relationship, vrittis. They're vrittis because they're thought modifications that come and go. They're not a comment on me, really. Right? They're just a thought modification that comes and goes. Because if I could say, I see the painting, and now I look this way, and now I say, I am looking out the window. You know? Or I can say, I am tired. Right? All of these eyes are just very fluid. The eyes are landing upon different conditions, sensory conditions or physical conditions. Or I could say, I could land on my gender, I'm a woman, you're a man, I'm a woman, you're a man. Or I could land on my age, you know. I could land on, you know, anything. The eye can land on anything. And it only stays there for a moment. Only stays there when it's relevant. So these eyes are something which is nothing other than a vritti. So now the thing is, there's the eye vritti, the I thought, which I illumine, and there's the painting thought, which I illumine. Right? So there's the emotional thought that I illumine. There's the I am emotional thought that I illumine, ahankara. So all of the ahankaras, the ahankaras are just vrittis that are arising in the mind. They're not arising in the self. Atma just simply illumines all the vrittis. Atma, consciousness doesn't care whether the vritti is a ahankara or whether it's a perception or whether it's an emotion. It doesn't care at all. It's just like, you know, the sun illumining, you know, whatever is in its sphere does not make any judgment whatsoever on what is being illumined. It is just simply the luminary, and whatever comes into its sphere is illumined. And so like that, whatever comes into my sphere, in the sphere of consciousness, is illumined. And what that means, basically, is that any vritti, whether it be an I thought or a thou thought, I thou it, it makes absolutely no difference. All of it has me, conscious being, as its truth, you know, as the stable factor. Okay, but now, what he says, so that's the first thing he says, that which is real, where that which is real is that where the ahankara, it doesn't rise. That's not where the ahankara rises. Ahankara rises in the mind. It's a vritti, okay? But then it says, but without inquiring into the place where that is arising, without inquiring into that, that thing that is arising cannot be destroyed. Okay, so now, it's almost like these two statements are contradictory. First thing it says, the satyastiti, what is actually there, right, what is actually there, what is real, is that where the aham does not rise. And then he says, without inquiring into that place where it arises, right, it can't be destroyed. So let me explain. When a perception of the painting arises, right, that perception is illumined by awareness. And an ahankara will come in and say, because it's known, I, the awareful subject. Okay, so this painting is known. It's if I have a vritti of the painting, it is known. Now, say I want to inquire into the nature of the painting or the place where the painting is arising. That's going to send me into an extroversion, right? I want to see where the painting is arising. Where does the painting come from? So now I'm looking out. What if I have the thought, so that's one type of vritti. Now I'm going to be looking into the painting to try to determine the truth of the painting. If I try to determine the truth of the painting, then I go into an infinite regress. I can't find it because I'm looking into Maya. But what if this is a different type of thought? What if the thought that comes that says, I see the painting? Okay. So now I've got a number of things. We've got the ahankara here. I see the painting. So now I could inquire into the painting to find the satyastiti, that which is actually real. Or I could inquire into the seeing. If I'm inquiring into the seeing, then I have to go into my sense organs, the eyes, and analyze those. I could even go into the mind, the vritti, and analyze the vritti. You know? But now, what about the eye? Right. What about the eye? What if I go into analyzing the place where the eye occurs? Right. What I'm talking about there is like this. If I analyze the place where the painting occurs, then the word painting goes to the painting, right? Where does the word eye land? What does the eye identify with? So he says like this, without inquiring into the place where the word eye arises, how can I destroy it? Okay, so I have to make these words work a little bit better. It goes down to this. If I take this lamp and I say, lamp, if I want to inquire into the place where the word lamp comes from, I have to go into the lamp. What about the word I? What is the word I referring to? You know, it's referring to me. What is the me experience? This is the problem with the ahankara. The ahankara initially is going to land on things that are really objectified, like the painting. Right? The painting is known. And so the word painting lands on that, and that's fine. But what if the word I landed on the painting? You know, like what if I were to say, I am the painting? Well, that's the problem we have with it. That's what makes it ahankara. We don't have a problem. We don't say, unless we're psychotic, we don't say, I am the painting and I am the rug and I am the, you know, I am the chair. But we do say, I am this body. So now the ahankara is landing here on the body. But if we analyze that, there's no difference in terms of objectification between the painting and the body. Because both are known, both are objectified, both are known through my five sense organs. So if I analyze where this I, the I arises, is it arising in something which I am looking at? Is what I am looking at, or am I left behind? See what I mean? Like if I say, I am the painting, right? Then I become out there. I'm no longer the subject. But that same phenomena occurs when I say, I am the body, if the body is objectified. The same problem occurs if I say, I am my sense organs, if the sense organs are something which I enjoy a subject-object relationship with. But every time I'm able to put the I, this word I, on something which is actually objectified and actually comes and goes in my experience, then the ahankara, right, the ahankara is born. That's what makes it an ahankara. And the instant I realize that I have placed me, the I, on this object, once I realize that ahankara is destroyed. The instant I realize it, because I'm not the thing I'm looking at, I'm the luminary, I'm the conscious being, because of which this is aware, I'm always the subject. So any time you recognize the I thought to be landing on something which is actually an object of your awareness and coming into and out of your awareness, at that instant, that ahankara is destroyed. Do you see that? Because the subject-object relationship reveals that you are putting this word I on something that you're looking at, and you've differentiated it from you, the subject. So here he says, without inquiring into the place where this thing arises, because the more you inquire, you are removing, because every time you, that's why the strict Drisha Viveka, the seer-seeing differentiation is so, so important, because every time you objectify something, you are inquiring into where this is arising, and it's not going to be there, right? Because this is an object. So this is not, yourself is not really being labeled by having the I land on the object. So that's the inquiry, until finally, where the aham is no longer landing on an object, then he says like this. He says, without inquiring into where it's rising, it can't be destroyed. But as instant you do inquire into where it's arising, that drikdrisha, that seer seeing, destroys it. Right? That ahankara is destroyed. He said, if you don't do that, go through that process, how can you end up at yourself? That's why he says the swatmaikya nishta. How can you end up there at yourself? Because the self is going to be, you know, the one who, in the end, cannot be objectified. And if it cannot be objectified, then there's not going to be anything landing on it. Right? There's not going to be any subject-object relationship. If the ahankara, if the body can be objectified, the sense organs can be objectified, the mind can be objectified, the emotions can be objectified, the I thoughts can be objectified, right? And the I thought, what we mean by ahankara, this word ahankara, ego, what they mean, we don't use the word ego, but that's sometimes how it's translated. What that means is that the word I am, is landing upon something that is objectified. That's what makes it an ahankara.
Mm.
And the thing is that it's not a joke. I'm not just kidding when I say that. If I use the word I, if I don't have self-knowledge, when I use the word I is always associated with something which is objectified, whether it be the thought which I'm aware of, the emotion I'm aware of, you know, the physical body that I'm aware of, the relationship, you know, like I'm a sister or mother, etc., the relationship. It's always associated, the I is always associated with something that I am illumining. If this word I is not associated with something that I'm illumining, but in fact is labeling me, the self, right? Because I have a mind, and if I do that differentiation, I can use the I from a standpoint of knowledge, which is referring to the ultimate subject that is illumining even that thought, right? But if that's jnanavritti, that thought is knowledge. That's where I could say, I am Brahman, or I am pure consciousness, you know, or I am the same in all beings. All of these things that we teach at the time of teaching, I can say all of those things, that I am fullness, I am pure consciousness. The self that I am is the self that you are. I can say all those things about this conscious being. Then when I'm using the aham, I'm using it, the word I, aham, I'm using it then as a mahavakya. Because what would I say? I'm prajnanam brahma, or I can say I am consciousness. The consciousness which I am is the consciousness that you are. I am Ishwara. That's what I'm going to be saying. These are all the things, this is exactly what the Vedanta has to unfold, is that. But what about, I don't know that, then I'm saying, I am my body, or I am short, or tall, or fat, or sick, or I am happy, or sad, or whatever, in whatever way I'm labeling my experience. The ahankara is hooking on to whatever functions for me as an upadhi, a conditioning agent, wherever the eye can land, you know. Wherever the eye can land. That's why we have these five koshas, the anamaya kosha, etc. We have those koshas. We have the three shariras, the subtle body, the physical body, the subtle body, the causal body, the five sheaths. We go through all of these different states, all showing where the ahankara, where the eye, where the ahankara lands. It's always landing on, it's always identifying me, the ultimate subject, with an experience that I'm having. Even waking, dream, deep sleep, all of these are prakriyas. They're all teaching methodologies, you know, to make me see, oh, you know, I take myself to be the waker in the waking state. But the waker in the waking state is replaced by the dreamer in the dream state, is replaced by the deep sleeper. These are all things to show that the conscious being that I am, that's the anuvritti, means that which is there present to all of those three states of experience, all of which negate each other, that myself is there shining, not taking on any of these roles at all. So over and over again, you know, the recognition is taking this ahankara. Ahankara means that I that's landing on something that I'm not, and bringing it back to properly labeling, landing on me. So now, when it lands, when the ahankara lands on me, what does that mean? It's simply the recognition that the conscious being that I am, the conscious being that I am, that illumines this either jnanavritti, I am Brahman, it's a thought, I am Brahman, but I know what it means, but it's a thought, I am Brahman, or I am the body, right? Consciousness doesn't care. Awareness doesn't think of itself. You know, it doesn't have a self. It doesn't have a. It's not thinking I'm a jnani or I have self knowledge or I don't have self knowledge. It's free. It is consciousness illumining. Like the sun isn't thinking I'm luminous or my light is being given to me by something else. It's not thinking. It just simply is. So like that. You simply are. Consciousness simply is. It's not being improved or changed by a jnanavritti, a knowledge thought, or an ignorant thought. It doesn't care.
at all. But the mind cares. Bondage and liberation, this whole problem, isn't Brahman's problem. It's not the problem of yourself. Yourself doesn't have any problem. Yourself is always the same, exactly the same. The problem is with the mind. And the ahankara rises in the mind. You know? And just think about it. I have a thought of the painting. Did you hear what I just said? I have a thought of the painting. I am seeing the painting. The painting is 10 feet from me. We use this I all the time. And the eye is always landing on the body, the mind, the sense organs, whatever the emotions, whatever experience I'm having. It's landing on relationship. Right now, I'm the Vedanta teacher and you're the Vedanta student. I am the Vedanta teacher. You are the Vedanta student. I. It's endless. It's endless. That's why people don't ever have to worry about who they are. Because who you are, this is why it's so extraordinary for you to be a mumukshu or to be somebody who even questions who you are. Because who you are is being continually defined by your situation. I am hot, I am cold, I am sitting on the chair, you know, I'm going to bed at 10 or 11 tonight. Whatever. It's continually being taken care of by the environment. You never have to think about it. You never have to say, who am I? Your who am I is always defined for you by the situation, by your physical, mental, emotional state, and your relational state, and where you're located. Mm. I'm in Berkeley. I live in Berkeley. Mm. You ought to just start listening to yourself. The use of I, me, and mine. I, me, and mine is totally landing upon the body, mind, sense organs, and the relationship you time and place and all of this type of thing. Totally taken care of. So then somebody says, who am I really? That, you know, when I was talking to my mother, I always tell this little story. I'd gotten back from India and I was kind of telling her, you know, who am I really? And she just said, oh, honey, I don't have those kind of problems. You know? What do you mean, who am I really? I'm your mother. Your mother sitting in this house with 6 kids. You know? Yeah. It's taken care of. You know. So this, even this very questioning, the very questioning is unique. But he says, without that inquiry into the I, you know, how can you possibly gain any type of nishta? Or knowledge, you know. He says, another thing, Ramana will say, like, nishta is, there are a lot of words that we have to kind of use to make this clear. Nishta really means clarity or firmness or abiding in knowledge. These are all words we use. But the point that he's trying to make in the way that he uses the language, yourself, the conscious being that you are, is always present, it is always exactly the same, and it is you. Now, do you at this moment abide as you, or as the whatever the ahankar is labeling? If you are just abiding as you, that means that you have nishta. See what I mean? Who you, like when you say to yourself, not to somebody else, you don't walk around saying, I'm Brahman, but what is your self-reference? Is the self-reference this body, mind, sense organs? I mean, really, in a real way, not just in the relative, practical way. Does your aham, this is a good little exercise, when the I thought rises, like if you were to just kind of be quiet with yourself and you say, I am, where does it land? Does it land on you? Or does it land on the body-mind-sense complex? Or does it just automatically kind of land on you as a relational being, whatever relationship is predominant for you right now? Where does it land? For somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, it's not going to land on the self. Mm. Right? It's going to land on the upadhi. If you know the self, then it lands on the self. If it lands on the self, and that is what is natural for you, you have nishta. Because your being is, the being that you are is self-evident. All that knowledge, that self-evident means it's self-shining, kind of like the sun is self-shining. You, the conscious being, are always you, the conscious being. Whether you know it or not. Now, that's tricky too. Like if you say, whether you know it or not, that has nothing at all to do with your self-experience as being a conscious being. You do know it completely, fully, because that you have nishta in that. I am a conscious being, the me, in your me experience. Every one of us, with or without knowledge, you have nishta in your being me. The lack of nishta comes only in reference to what is responsible for this me. This me is, the body is responsible for me. The body-mind is responsible for me. The soul is responsible for the me, right? The body-mind complex is responsible for me. You know, whatever. But it's going to be something which is objectified, which is illumined, that makes me me. That's what's natural, normal in the world. So that ignorance, self-ignorance, is what needs to be eliminated. You're not going to eliminate your me experience because that is who you are. That's Brahman, in fact. You eliminate the ignorance, self-ignorance that causes you to take the me that I am to be this. That taking the me that I am to be this is the ahankara. And that ahankara is born of ignorance. But until we inquire into that experience of the aham, of the I, and its relationship, what it's landing on, and then keep negating these things that are actually not me, you know, until we do that, we can't possibly have nishta in myself. Because what's natural is for it to land on here. So this is what has to take place, and without it taking place, there can't be any nishta. It's impossible. But the thing to understand, just so that you don't get confused on this, is that you already have full and complete nishta, clarity in your sense of self, the me, what you mean by what you say me. That isn't going to change. You gain knowledge, and what the only thing that happens is all the things that are not, that the me, the self that I am, is not dependent on at all, right? All of those things fall off my self concept. I now just recognize me as me, and I'm always exactly the same, no matter what I'm feeling, no matter what I'm thinking. I can have all of my emotions, I'm still a human being, I'm still functioning in the world and doing everything, you know? From the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, and I am always exactly the same. So both things are recognized at the same time, the Maya and everything that's going on in Maya, and me, the very being, you know, because of which the Maya is, and that becomes really clear. But it doesn't, I mean, with Ramana, this is not like an intellectual exercise. Right? So that's why he's always trying to make you actually realize that he's actually talking about you, you know, and making you differentiate your experience so that you recognize that. Moksha really is recognizing, you know, that the self that you are is indestructible. There's nothing that can be done about it. And it goes on from there. That Brahman doesn't usually go so much into this area. But that self that you are, that's non-objectifiable, has got to be the self that everything is. That I am the whole. That's where it has to end up. And as it ends up there, then this body, mind, sense organs, which is as objectified as the painting, all of these things are illumined by me. And if I can say the painting, the wall, the body, the mind, the whole thing is illumined by me, then I can say the whole universe is illumined by me. Because I've objectified all of the limiting factors. If I objectified all the limiting factors, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the eye thought, the moods, the emotions, the ignorances, the knowledges, the relationships, all limiting factors are objectified, then, and I still am, then there is nothing to limit me. And just think like this. If this body, mind, sense, organs, all limiting factors are thrown into the room to be part of the room, right, then the room exists in me. Because this body, mind, sense, organs, moods, emotions, feelings, all things objectified belong to the objective world. And so now instead of me being a jiva within the objective world of this room with a seer seen relationship, everything that is the jiva belongs to the room also. And so now the whole thing is in awareness. There's nothing to limit. There's nothing to limit the awareness. And everything that I thought I was becomes part of the objective world. So that's why the teaching goes on and on and on. It just doesn't stop with you as awareness. It goes into you recognizing who you are as the very self of the creation. And what he's saying here, he says this, he says, you know, without really destroying this ahankara, which means all of the places where the I-vritti can land, by destroying it means negating its truth. Without negating all of that, how can there be, katam astu nishta, he says, how can there be this swatma aikirupa, the nishta, which is the nishta, the abiding in the self, myself, the swatma aikya, he goes, rupa, that nishta whose nature is the aikya, the oneness of my own self. The oneness of myself. What that? So this aikya is the mahavakya. The oneness of myself means just this. And this is where I get to recognize that I am the whole. If I've removed the ahankara, each one of us have removed the ahankara systematically from everything that is objectifiable, and I realize, I'm labeling myself as this thing which I'm looking at. So each one of us is withdrawing that ahankara systematically. Each one of us does it. Then what happens is that the self that I'm left with is no longer able to be labeled by anything which can be objectified. Right? Like it can't be labeled by the body or the mind or the sense organs or anything. If that's so, then what, even by space, anything that I can be aware of and anything that can change. So if that's so, then what makes my being, which is no longer can be identified as the body or the mind or sense organs or emotions or anything, what makes me, you know, two? Like, you have your me and you have your me and you have, so what are the eight me's in the room or whatever? What is dividing the, what is making the eight me's eight? You know, what makes them eight or nine? Or we can say, you know, the nine bodies make them nine. Make there be nine me's because we have nine bodies. Or we have nine sets of sense organs. That makes for nine me's. Or nine minds. That makes for nine me's. But you've already drawn your eye away from all of those things. Right? So what is going to be the dividing line between these nine me's to make there be nine of them? And anything you can think of to divide us into nine is something you've already eliminated as yourself. See what I mean? Because they're objectified. And those experiences come and go while you remain the same. And so what you're left with is you're left with you. It's not somebody else. You're left with you, the very you that you take yourself to be as the me. But what you discover is that this me, which is me, it's not somebody else. It is me. But this me that I am is only one. It's Aikya. So that means, see, we think that what gives me the experience of the me that I'm attached to that I think really counts is somehow this body, mind, sense organs. And so my very personal sense of me that makes me is somehow given to me by my body, mind, sense organs. And that's why we think that there's nine me's in the room. But what about when you realize that the me that makes me has nothing to do with the body, mind, sense organs? Because objectified. I'm talking about your sense, your me-ness that makes you you, that you identify with you. Like if you say, I am this body, what you're saying is, I, the conscious being, am this body. This body is what makes me me. And when I die, what my fear is that what really makes me, will die. Mm. So I'm saying when you do this viveka, differentiating, and do this analysis of the ahankara, what is continually, what you continually recognize is that, well, what makes me, the me that I take to be me, that I identify with as me, actually is not dependent at all on this body, mind, sense organs, moods, emotions, anything that can be objectified, anything that comes and goes, I still am. And so it is this me, then you say, well, how can there be nine of this me? And there can't be nine, because those things are all objectified. And then people say, yeah, but I want to be the personal me. I'm saying, though, the personal me is Brahman. The personal me that you are attached to, that makes you you, that you love, and that you think is what makes you a unique person, you know, it is, you are a unique person, but you are only one. You are a unique person, and you are the beloved, you are the most dear to yourself, but that one that you are is the self of the entire universe. The one that you are is the self of the entire universe. And you can understand, like if I say that about you and your dream, you'll say, I know that. You know, if I say you, the one that you are, is the self of your entire dream and of all of the beings in it. And that's why when the dream comes and the dream goes, the dream comes, it is there and it goes away, you still are. Nothing happens to you at all. And in fact, the you that you are is really the truth of every one of those beings in the dream. But now here we are in the waking state and we're talking like this. It's easy for you from the standpoint of the waking state to understand the non-dual nishta of your own being in reference to the dream. But now here as waking state, it's like, say, here we are in Bhagawan's dream trying to understand that really the me that I am is the self of the entire dream. This is Ishwara's dream, you can say. You know? So we have to understand this very personal me that I am, you know, is the self of the whole, and is Aikya. It's only one, because there's no way to, once you do this viveka, this differentiation, there's no way to make me two. Now, how are you going to discover this in any real way? That's not just intellectual verbiage. And so that's why Ramana is saying is that you have to do this inquiry into your own experience, into your own being. And you have to look at the ahankara, the I, you know? And you have to follow that I to its resting place, you know, to what it is really referring to. And what it is really referring to is not something that rises and sets, you know. And so that's the only way, is to remove it from these things that it's been landing on, and then recognize the consciousness which it's really referring to. So that's it. And so unless you do that, it's all neti-neti, you know, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. What are you left with after all of that is yourself. And the self that you're left with is the self that you have always been. It's just now you realize that it's free. It's not subject to time. It's not subject to change. It's not subject to becoming happy or sad. It is its own ananda, you know. It's the silence that illumines silent sound and noise. It's the ananda that illumines happiness and sadness. The ananda that's present to happiness and sadness. It's the beloved, it's the one that is the constant in all of my experience. The one, like, if you were to say, even in just talking normally without knowledge, you recognize that you are the one who is there in all of your experience. You would never say, oh no, I'm only there in some of my experiences. All experiences are centered on me. So the viveka is, who is the me that is there, present, fully present to every experience. I am present to every experience. So to discover who that is, you have to negate all of the things that can be negated. Anything that leaves, any experience that comes and goes, is not you. You're the one that is there present to every single experience. And that is the very, very personal me. We get screwed up with Vedanta because you're afraid to be one without a second, because you're afraid that, can be afraid that you will lose, that they couldn't possibly be talking about me. Because the me is the most obvious thing. It's the most self-evident thing. But that's exactly what the Upanishad is talking about, saying this very personal me is the self in all beings. It's only one. But it is very personal because it's you. It's just that I happen to be only one. That's the vision. Why don't we stop there? Okay. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
Sure. had a question I wanted to ask before I came, and then you said something tonight that I think ties in. The question, where does the I am land?
Yeah.
I was noticing in contemplation something today that I wanted to ask about, and it seems like I'm an example of that. For me, at least currently, it seems like the I am doesn't land. Like, this is, relates to what I was asking about in class yesterday. Like, I'm always behind it. It's really, the I am seems to exist from the outward location. Not that I don't exist, but somehow it, that statement, I am, never seems to align with my sense of self. And which also makes me think about the term Chirabhasa.
It could just be semantics, though.
It could be, but yeah. Let me say something more, because maybe it's not.
Okay.
I was noticing that there is an experience in contemplation of pure witnessing, just objective witnessing. There seems to be. Like that's just the buddhi. But it can somehow seem where there's this witnessing of the coming and going of thoughts. But then also a sense that of myself sort of behind the witness, so to speak.
Yeah.
And what I notice is that sense, what we call consciousness or the luminary, seems to still be associated with the witness. Like, I'm behind the witness. So I feel like my sense of existence is knownness, is existence, but somehow consciousness, what we call consciousness, is tied up with this idea of that witnessing of what's coming and going, and somehow I don't... There's still...
Well, that's right what you're saying. Yeah, that's the Chirabhasa in the sense that any vritti is known. Okay, but the knownness of the vritti can, the ahankara can come and identify as a witness to the vritti, but actually the vritti is just known. So there, consciousness is not a knower or a witness. Mm-hmm. And so you have to recognize the one, like even right now, if you want to say you are behind the witness, that's all right, because I think I know what you mean. That the witnessing really belongs to the Chidabhasa. But you're differentiating between the witness or knower aspect that belongs to the Chidabhasa and is the same, really. There's the objects in the vritti and the knownness of the vritti. That's the witness. But then there's just the conscious being, which can be differentiated from this Chidabhasa, which is the truth of the whole thing, mm-hmm. which is also self-evident. Mm-hmm. Right?
See, so now maybe it's a matter of semantics, because I have this strong association between consciousness and what we call the luminary. And that sense of luminosity, for me, seems like Chidabhasa, seems like witnessing consciousness, because the sense of knownness, existence, just... doesn't seem, it's self-evident, but it doesn't seem illumined in the way...
Not illumined, but self...
Go ahead.
If self-evident works for you, if I'm saying luminary, when we use those type of words, kind of in line with using the sun as an illustration or as a drishtanta, we'll use something like luminous or luminary. But to me, luminary doesn't have anything to do with witnessing. It's not verbal. And so if it becomes verbal to you, like witness, then that word is not working for you.
It's more like visual which is aware of what's coming and going, which is almost like a knower versus knownness versus self-evident.
But then that luminary word isn't working for you.
Okay. Yeah,
that's not the right word. If self-evident works, you know, or if you can say, the word consciousness also is a loaded word, because we think of consciousness, I'm conscious of that.
Right.
It has that knowership. And so the thing is,
all of these words, they all are problematic. You have to be juggling them. That the whole teaching is using this word to negate, you know, the relative aspects of this word. So you're playing them against each other in such a way that they can land on their target. Like right now, the words are landing on the fact of it for you. And you're saying, well, if I use this word like this, then that brings witnessing, and the consciousness is not witnessing. It's not. It's not doing anything. So that means that somehow those words are starting to land on the fact of it.
But I'm wondering now, how does that witnessing come together with what currently seems to be, so to speak, behind the witnessing? You know, because now there's still this subtle division. There's still this subtle division experientially, even though logically.
Well, the subtle division, if you have, you know, what we call, say the mind is sattva. If we take mind, because this can be helpful. Say if we say that the mind and sense organs are made of sattva, that means in any vritti, that vritti by its nature enjoys knownness. Right? Because that's the chittabhasa, the fact that it enjoys knownness.
What is chittabhasa?
We call reflection of consciousness. But if we say sattva, a material, maya, you know, as though it reflects consciousness, what that means is that that material enjoys knownness. And because it enjoys knownness and objectification, right, what is the ahankara in that going to identify there? It's going to identify with the knowership in reference to, it can identify with the awareness in the vritti because of the sattva, or it can identify with the object of the vritti. So it's going to identify with the knower, not with the known. It'll call consciousness as the knower, not as the known. Whereas in fact, there's only one consciousness, which is the self there of the knower and the known. And that is what is self-evident. The chittabhasa is what allows for the vritti to be known in the first place.
What was that?
The chittabhasa, the sattva, is what allows. I mean, maya. Maya is like a display, right, of experiences. And the whole, from Ishvara's standpoint, maybe this is a little off the track, but anyway, from Ishvara's standpoint, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, each one of those three is absolutely pervasive to the entire maya upadhi. And so there's going to be the whole maya upadhi from Ishvara's standpoint is a display of activity, of objects, and of knownness. But that's the nature of maya. So for you have your little Ishvara in reference to your mind. You know, there's a display of knownness. Right? The whole thing is known. That's the display of sattva. There is continual movement and activity, and there's nama, rupa, name, and form. So maya is like a display, like that. But from you in reference to the vritti, if you say in the dream or in an imagination, you can recognize in that your own nishta, in just your own presence that's not doing anything. And then also, there's no identification with any given thing in the vritti. Okay? So now you can understand that oneness there. Now you go into your situation here. And it's exactly the same. There's your own being and whatever is going on in the vritti. The ahankara will identify with the chittabhasa in the vritti to make you a knower. But it won't identify with the consciousness, which is just simply abiding there. Okay? And so that's what we have to do, is get the ahankara to land on the me that's not doing anything. That's why when you do
what if the ahankara doesn't land on me, but it's not identified with?
Well, I think the problem is the word land on.
Okay.
Yeah. What if it?
Oh, I see what you mean. The
it's not landing on anything. No, it's recognition. It's a recognition. Because you're self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
And now the eye knows the, and now you, the mind, the buddhi recognizes what it is, what the ahankara is, what the mind is, and who you are. Because that ajnana has been removed. And you're not a knower of anything. Even right now, if you recognize yourself, just your own presence, you're not doing anything. You're not knowing anything. And that's not a problem at all. You're the very self of the me experience is totally complete for itself. This is just a manifestation of you, really. So there's no sense of incompleteness. Oh, I'm not knowing anything. Uh-oh. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, you're not knowing anything at the same time you're knowing something. I mean, you know.
That's right, through the upadhi, you're knowing something. But you can recognize the freedom of the wholeness of yourself that's not performing any function at all. You can say, because of me, I'm the self of all of this. I'm not away from all of this, and all of this is known. As long as this is here, this will be known. Yeah, but I'm not performing any function. And I can recognize that.
You know? And you have to hold both of those...
It's just the totality.
You have to hold both ideas at the same time. I mean,
but I'd say instead of ideas,
yourself,
that's what we mean by nishta. Yourself is self-evident. Once you've removed all of the ignorance that has caused you to misidentify yourself with all of these experiences. And so that's what gives you the nishta. You don't have to think about it. You are that. You are self-evident. It's not something you have to go walk around thinking about. Once you've removed the ignorance that caused the ahankara to land on all of these things, which in fact you are not. That's why he says here the self is not, the ahankara is not rising out of the self. Nothing's happening to me at all.
But you still illumine the I notion, the mistaken identities as well as the true identity. I mean,
The consciousness is the only luminary or the only consciousness that is there. There's not a second consciousness. Right? And it's just that, now say you have a vritti that has self-ignorance. Right? Then whatever the content of that vritti is, with all of its ignorance, is what is illumined by you. Not illumined in a subject object, but which enjoys your being, your consciousness. This ignorant vritti enjoys your consciousness.
Yeah.
This knowledgeable vritti enjoys your consciousness, your being. Right? Your being doesn't care at all. You are what you are. You are free. You don't become free. You are free. The one that becomes, so-called becomes free is the suffering jiva. That's taken me, the self, to be limited and, you know.
Can I ask you?
Limited also in terms of your own fullness.
So, is this correct that ahankara is really me, but when ahankara really objectifies anything, that's basically when the confusion starts.
Well, remember, when we say ahankara, that's just a thought. It's a thought that arises in the mind. Now, is that thought, when we say use the word ahankara?
Yeah.
That means that I thought is landing on something. Like, say you start, the I thought comes, I am the mind. Right? It's landing, the ahankara is landing on something.
Right, so the only confusion is that the ahankara is not... The only confusion arises when the ahankara is not landing, if we use that word, on the me.
Right, that's what makes it ahankara.
Yeah, I wanted to get clear about that. So if the ahankara doesn't land on an object, then it's not ahankara, then it's just me.
Well, that's true. We would just say aham, unless we're using it just as a... What we'll say, and this is that in Pajita Shi where they discuss this in kind of a useful way. For Jnani, somebody who has Nishta means that self-recognition is there, that Ajnanam has been removed. Then you'll still say, I'm going to the store, I'm reading a book, you know, I'm having a conversation with you, I. All the time you use it just in normal parlance. But that's what it's like a burnt seed. We know what we're talking about. We know how we're using that word. Like if I say I have knowledge, I know who I am, then I say, oh, I'm having a conversation with you. Or do I think, oh my gosh, now all of a sudden the Atmas talks. Uh-huh. Right? No. I'm just talking within Vyavahara, within empirical reality, the way normal people talk. And I know how I'm using the word I. Right? I know.
Which is more like you're referring to the body-mind complex.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
without
a deeper kind of...
Without any ignorance being involved.
Right.
Right? I know exactly what I mean by that. But if I'm teaching, I'm not going to be unfolding to you that you are the body who is talking. Right? That's just a way that we talk, you know, in common parlance. Right? I'm going to the store. I'm not going to start... change all my vocabulary and start saying, you know, my mind is thinking about this, my body is walking to the store, you know, my eyes are looking at you. We're not going to change our language in that way. But that doesn't mean if I say I'm looking at you that I've all of a sudden become my eyes. And so a jnani is going to talk like a normal person, but they know what they're using the pronoun for, right, what it's referring to. And then when they're talking, when they're teaching... Mm-hmm. They're going to be explaining all of this, just like I'm explaining this now. You know, so that then we're going to be using the word I, we're going to be analyzing it to see who am I really?
Right. Yeah. But Romana was writing that in order for understanding, I don't know exactly how he said it, but mm-hmm. in order for understanding to really fully take place, we need to understand where the ahankara is arising from, right? Now, if we are really Brahman, and we are pure consciousness, and everything is really finding its way back to the me, into the consciousness, then the ahankara is also just a function within the me, really, that is, but that it's not, it doesn't kind of lead to us objectifying ourselves or anything else outside of that me. Do you know what I mean? It's like, now I'm just kind of, you know, what is the real root of the ahankara, if not in the me? Because that's the answer, that's the question he's asking,
yeah.
Right?
The real root of the ahankara is me, conscious being.
But
it's not going to be rising and setting out of consciousness. Right? It's going to be landing on, it's a vritti in the mind that's going to be landing on everything but pure consciousness. It takes consciousness to be the body.
I see.
That to be one experience.
Okay. I think I'm getting it more now. So there's a relative purpose for the ahankara in a way you could say, but from a deeper understanding...
Wait a minute. When we use the word ahankara, that's a technical term.
Yeah.
It means that the conscious being that you are really, the mind takes you to be the body. Mm-hmm. And that is what we call a ahankara. I am the body. Or I am sad. That's a thought. Mm-hmm. Now in that thought, what it's doing is identifying you who are actually just free, completely whole, complete being that's doing nothing, It takes your me, that mm-hmm. sense of me, mm-hmm. and says, I am sad. Mm-hmm. Right? So now, I am identified mm-hmm. with this experience. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the ahankara is what identifies, it's called like the knot of the heart, hridaya granthi. It identifies my me that is stable and changeless with an experience that I'm having. And when we, when it does that, it's what we call this superimposition takes place, mm-hmm. where I, the conscious being, becomes sad, and the sad state of mind becomes the conscious being. Mm-hmm. It's a mutual superimposition. Mm-hmm. That's brought about by a lack of viveka, by ignorance. So I haven't differentiated the two. And so the ahankara is that type of a thought that identifies these two things and makes them into one. Mm-hmm. Like the in the next verse, I think it is, that, or the verse after that, Raman is going to be talking about the red hot iron ball, right, as an expression of that false identification, where you take two things to be one.
But, you know, I think the conflict is still, in a certain way, the ahankara, if I know that I'm really the me that you're referring to,
yeah.
then the ahankara is kind of a superimposed projection, illusion, you can say.
No, it's
but
just,
it's also a function at the same time.
It's a function of the mind, and we use it for convenience, because
right.
actually this yeah. body is enjoying me.
Yeah.
So I can say I am this body. That's also true, as long as I can say I am free of the body that sits in mitya.
Yeah.
So
that,
I'm
that's
using
the it. Only difference then between one that is ignorant and one that knows.
That really, both are exactly the same.
Yeah, the same kind of identity.
It's exactly the same, but there's one is without any viveka, mm-hmm. But it's the same self. Mm-hmm. That's why. There's not a difference in self-experience.
But, you know, there's also, it's not like a difference in identity either. There's the bird seed identity, which is still an identity, and then there's the ignorant identity.
Well, that's true also. That's like, it's not like for a jnani, the person who has knowledge, all of a sudden, this body isn't going to be awareness. You know, as long as this is an upadi, as long as it enjoys awareness, it's not like you get knowledge and then this body doesn't enjoy you.
There's no disassociation.
No, there's no disassociation. There doesn't need to be any dissociation. But at the same time, both are completely recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Like you recognize yourself. That's the nishta. Mm-hmm. You know yourself. This ignorance has been removed. You are always exactly the same. You know, and it doesn't really matter what's going on in the world or what's going on in your mind. You are always the same. But then the thing is once the mind recognizes that ajnanam has been removed, the mind does settle down, you know, because it had been asking the world to give it what the world can't give it. It doesn't ask that anymore. It goes directly to the source. You know, and so it relaxes. It's come home. It's like finding your way home. And then once you get home, you know, you can relax. And the home, your home, is secure. The self is secure. It's not going to change on you. It's not going to run away from you. You know, it's not going to disappoint you. It can't do it. It's a fail-safe. It can't do anything. You know.
So the mind becomes more calm and clear.
Totally.
Does the inverse also work? Like if you do a lot of concentration practice and you get very focused, does that enable you or facilitate a self-realization?
It depends on what you're focusing on.
Okay, so if in concentration practice you're focusing on outside world, but then you turn it inward, and then you do concentration practice on who am I, or...
But Gavin, see, concentration practice without any knowledge is just concentration practice.
Mm-hmm. So it's totally separate?
It can be useful. The practice, in being able to have a steady mind, and just like I consider yoga and all of these things very, very useful, but they don't necessarily remove any ignorance or self-ignorance. Mm-hmm. Because you can concentrate, what are you going to concentrate on? Like you can, it depends on what you're concentrating on. If you know what you're concentrating on, then that's what we call nididhyasana. You know what you're concentrating on. If you don't know what you're concentrating on, then you're doing mental gymnastics of a sort, which can be useful in strengthening your mind, you know. But it itself is not going to result in what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It could result in giving you different types of experiences, but then you don't really know what those experiences are in reference to yourself, because yourself was completely fully there before, during, and after those experiences. And so if you're concentrating on the experience versus what was there prior and after, then you've missed it, because you are the one who is the one present to that whole before, during, and after experience. So the concentration itself isn't going to help unless it's concentrating on something you've already known. Mm-hmm. But if it's concentrating on something you already know, it can be very helpful. Really, I mean, that's what we mean by nididhyasana, just contemplation. But for Vedanta, contemplation is contemplation upon something that you know, not something that you don't know. And then it's very helpful for breaking what we call the Dehatma Buddhi, the conviction that the body is the Atma, you know, or the mind is the Atma. Nididhyasana, you know, helps the mind, gives the mind a chance to really sit in its knowledge. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's stop now because I'm going to meet someone.
Okay.
No, I just want to say, so that because of the arising of the ahankara that takes place, isn't it useful to just guide it back to that me?
Absolutely.
And so just kind of bring that viveka to that experience, and then you just recognize who you really are. Then the ahankara is like the mitya. Like you were saying, mitya and satya.
Mm-hmm. Satya, mitya.
Yeah, satya, mitya. And that seems like really the revolution in a sense.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful thing. Like when you're just when that ahankara is, is rising, just to keep bringing it home until you realize, then you don't have to bring it home anymore because you are that home. Mm-hmm. You know?
But there's a transition.
There's a transition because you're so used to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Yeah, too bad it just didn't. There needs to be a transition. It could just stick, you know?
That's called an uttama adhikari.
Where is he?
What does that translate into?
That means the most qualified student. They've already done all of their.
Right.
Been around the block. Yeah. Oh.